Welcome to the Educator Podcast How-To, where we dive in to discover the how-tos of life with the ones who've lived it. I'm your host, Matt Douglas, longtime educator and life coach for teens and young adults. Today we are here with Jared Kamrowski, who runs the travel company Thrifty Traveler. Now, full disclosure, I have no connection with Thrifty Traveler. I didn't really know much about them until I was able to reach out to Jared here. But I gotta be honest, this was a phenomenal conversation. We talk a ton about travel, places we've been, great places to go, and Jared is like a complete expert in the travel industry and ways to get great deals and find great trips and places to go. I learned a ton just from listening to him here for about an hour, and I'm sure that you will too. So take a listen. I think you're going to enjoy this. If you want access to the full unedited video interview from this episode, check out the exclusive content tab at theeducatorpodcast.com. And all right, without further ado, this is the Educator Podcast, how to travel the world and get great deals with Jared Kamrowski. Let's get into it. Jared Kamrowski is the founder of Thrifty Traveler, a leading source of flight deals, cheap travel tips, and maximizing travel rewards. Jared first honed his travel skills by traveling over 100 nights a year as a CPA, but left his corporate job in 2017 to run Thrifty Traveler full-time. Thrifty Traveler has turned into a successful business with a team of 10, and Jared still finds the time to fly over 100,000 miles per year. Jared currently lives with his wife in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Jared, very good to have you on. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me, Matt. Excited to talk about travel.
Yeah, who isn't?
Exactly.
No. So I did some math here. If you are flying over 100,000 miles a year, you are flying around the world over four times every single year. Oh my God.
And I should maybe put an asterisk by that in my bio now. I would say normally.
Yeah, 100,000. Sure COVID changes things a bit.
It has, because once you remove like the ability to go to like Asia or to the South Pacific, you know, New Zealand, Australia, it's tough to hit 100,000. But I used to for sure up till 2019. But it's been, I don't think I need to explain, a little bit more difficult.
Well, you've still been traveling a lot. I mean, you were saying to me a little bit earlier, you've been to Europe, what, like four times in the past few months?
Yeah. Three times in the last, three or four months, which is, I'll be honest, first world problem, a little tiring, all that travel, but it's been amazing to, you know, to get out, you know, traveling in the world. I mean, it is a different place for sure. Different requirements, et cetera. But it's been fun to be on the ground and see what things are like instead of just, you know, seeing it on, you know, TikTok or Instagram.
Yeah. And right now we're recording this in the middle of September of 2021. So it's like, I'm sure we'll get into this, but it's still sort of COVID restrictions, still sort of not. And I imagine that changes things a lot in terms of just how you travel, but also like what it's like to go to different places. So which countries have you been to in the past few months?
Went to Iceland, and then shortly after that went to Italy. And then most recent trip was France and Germany. So covered, you know, quite a few European countries in that time. And it was relatively quiet. I mean, there's like German tourists in Germany and Italian tourists, you know, in Italy, but I mean, American tourists, not very many.
Yeah, I would imagine. And are these trips that you're taking, are they business, pleasure, or both?
It's always intertwined a little bit. You know, we create a lot of content at thriftytraveler.com, and people are very interested to hear, you know, what is it like to travel, you know, whether yeah. we're creating content for thriftytraveler.com or for Instagram. People are definitely interested. So
yeah, so let's talk about that for a minute. I'm definitely curious to hear like a bit about your route from going to, you were CPA, so you're like living the corporate world life. And then only a few years later, you're running this successful travel company. So before we get into kind of like the travel tips and how to's and that kind of stuff, which I'm fascinated to hear about, how did you make that journey? How does that work?
Yeah. So it kind of started, you know, I graduated from college in 2009. I luckily got a job during the recession. And on that job, I was, you know, yeah, worked in banking, was a CPA. I was going to banks all over the US. I spent a lot of time in Washington, DC, you know, New York, but then I was like in places like International Falls, Minnesota, which is on the Canadian border. Nice. So I was traveling everywhere, which got me acquainted with kind of the world of points and miles, because I was flying a lot, staying in a lot of hotels. So I was getting credit cards and stuff. And then I had a bunch of student loans, like so many students graduating. My wife wanted to travel a lot. So had to figure things out. And that is the genesis of Thrifty Traveler. And then people, friends and family were like, you know, how are you doing this? And then I would explain the points and miles thing. And
so what kind of things were you doing? Were you like taking like free trips basically because you had all these points racked up?
Exactly. I mean, we were opening up, you know, like 15 credit cards a year, you know, a decade ago, my wife and I. And explaining that to somebody back then, like now kind of like credit cards and points and miles are kind of mainstream. But back then it was like this thing that sounded illegal.
I had a buddy who I think he got a credit card, used it to pay his rent, and then something like he bought gift cards with it. And because he bought gift cards, he got points, but he was still just the cash. And he went, I don't even know where, somewhere around the world for free. And we're like, are you going to go to jail?
That is known as the art of manufactured spending, which could be a whole podcast episode in and of itself. But it is, can be questionable for sure.
Got it. So what was your trajectory? So you eventually sort of quit your CPA job and dove into this company full time?
Yeah, I mean, everything always starts out as a side hustle. Mm-hmm. And I did that for 2 years, grinding it out. And I will be honest with you, and my wife would definitely support this, like, I didn't do anything but my job and then trying to get Thrifty Traveler off the ground. Anyone who says like starting a company is easy or something like that is definitely not telling probably the full truth. So, And then 2017, I finally quit my full-time job. So I created a subscription service in 2017, which is called Thrifty Traveler Premium. Now that's our biggest service. We send flight deals directly to people's email inboxes. And we cover 175 US and Canadian cities, and we charge $50 a year for that. And that was never what I thought Thrifty Traveler was all going to be about, but people love that service. And that's how we've been able to grow from, just me in 2017, quitting my job, and now we have 10 full-time employees.
And what do they love about that service? Like, you're sending them direct, like, you know, minute, like day by day or minute by minute deals, like, hey, if you book a flight to Seattle tomorrow, it's cheap, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, so everything's, you know, typically, you know, 2 to 11 months out, like nothing's like you got to fly this week or anything like that. You know, it's kind of like, I like to think we're like this good friend that you have that finds these amazing deals and is doing it 24/7. Nice. And sends them right to your email inbox. And they're super easy to book, and they don't have bad connections or anything like that. And you can save literally thousands of dollars, and it's only $50 a year. So it's so simple, really.
So can you give us some, like, what's an example of something that's out there right now?
Yeah. So I'll tell you something that was available through September 14th. It was available for like 4 days. Almost every single airport in the United States, whether it's Fargo, North Dakota, Lubbock, Texas, or, you know, Washington, D.C. or New York, you could fly to almost all of Europe, most of the capitals, major cities, for around $300 on United American, primarily on American and their partners. So normally, wow. I mean, that's like $1,000. So we as low as like $265
round trip.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Which is like completely bonkers. I mean, normally we'd see, you know, like $400 every once in a while. But the airlines, you know, they need cash to survive. And right now, you know, things aren't going well with the Delta variant. And, you know, that's the one thing that they can adjust is price. They don't advertise these sales, but we find this stuff. And again, we send it to our subscribers' email inboxes.
So how often does something like that come along? Like, this sounds like very random and sporadic, right?
It is random. That is, by definition, it is not predictable. And, you know, sales like in the $400 range or $500 range happen, you know, every 2 to 3 weeks, but not every U.S. city, which is a little bit more rare. But during, you know, the pandemic, we've seen, you know, the whole playbook of how flight deals work completely be thrown out. So, you know, anything's possible. I will say I cannot imagine that the flights will ever go below 260, but I've been wrong before.
I mean, that's pretty cheap, so I think that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't fly from Minneapolis to Chicago for that price. So it's wild that I can, you know, fly nonstop to, you know, Amsterdam.
So basically what your team is doing is just like keeping track of all these different, I'm sure it's not just flights, but all these different flight deals. And as soon as something pops up, you're immediately sending out to your subscribers. Is that kind of how it works?
Yeah, we're monitoring. We have a bunch of different tools that we use, and we're scraping just literally thousands of different routes. And we're looking for anomalies, really. You know, we might see something that's from, you know, Washington Dulles to Frankfurt. And then we'll be like, oh, maybe this is an indicator of flight deals from other US cities. And we know what the patterns look like. And we're able to extrapolate kind of like what's going on. And that's really the genesis of a lot of these deals. And I know we've been talking a lot about international deals, but domestic, you know, deals as well. So there's just so much happening with flight deals right now, which makes it very exciting to talk about.
And I feel like, you know, that's what, you know, every time I'm trying to plan a trip, you're always like looking, you check your flights and you wait like the next day and people say, oh, like it's more expensive on a Sunday or I don't know. And then there's these apps that kind of like alert you when something is cheaper. And I've always sort of felt like it's somewhat true. And there's just a lot of like myth there as well. So I guess what your guys are doing is like really doing the homework on that.
Yeah, we're cutting through. And like you said, there are so many myths, like clearing your cookies. Like that's not a thing. I mean, people clear their cookies all the time, but the truth is the variability, which you've already highlighted, of airline flight pricing. Airline flight pricing is changing all the time. That's why you check in the morning and it's X price. And then you check a few hours later and it's Y. And you're like, something is not right. Because, you know, when you go on Amazon, normally, you know, the price of whatever item you're buying doesn't change that much. But flight pricing, man, it is crazy, complicated. But, you know, that's what we do here at Thrifty Traveler is we're just trying to cut through that, identify, and just you get those alerts in your inbox and then you just book directly with the airline. And that's it. It's that simple.
So let's talk about some of this. So let's get into the weeds a bit for all the people listening who want to figure out a way to travel cheaply. So let's start with those flights. So like what would, if somebody's looking to find a cheaper flight, where do they start? You know, like I feel like most people just go onto like kayak.com or something and they just search and that's the end of it. What else is there? What else should they be doing?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing you should do is use Google Flights every single time you're searching. You know, if you're using Hopper, Kayak, you know, whatever, I would highly recommend just starting use Google Flights. I will say our team, for every single deal that we send out, we use Google Flights. Google Flights has been around for 10 years now, which is kind of crazy. The best part is it just has so many different tools and you can quickly scroll through 11 months of the calendar and find the cheapest dates for whatever route you want. They also have the ability, if you have a Gmail account, to set up price alerts. And these price alerts are really, really good. And especially in the last 2 years, they've improved so much. And, you know, people don't talk about Google Flights as much as they should. So if there's one thing I think people can take away from this podcast discussion on, you know, how to, you know, travel cheaper, Google Flights. Be using that for booking every single flight.
Why are they the best?
So you can quickly like search through dates and it'll find the cheapest dates in green. And then there's no games, there's no third parties. You book directly through the airline, you know, whether it's American, Delta, United, JetBlue, whoever. Yeah. That's the best thing. And especially during the pandemic, you know, if you've ever had to book through a third party and have to cancel, like you don't want to be, it's too complicated. You want to be working directly with the airline because that's just key. It's also got this explore function. Where you can like type in, you know, I'm flying from, you know, Miami, and I'm willing to go anywhere in Europe in the next 6 months. What's the cheapest flight? And it'll pull up the map of Europe and it will like quickly identify, you know, okay, if we're flying to Rome, you know, you can fly for $400.
That's awesome.
So super powerful. Nothing else really touches it. And I think if people hop in there, you know, poke around and book a few flights, you'll never go back to anything else.
What about Southwest? So I know that Southwest doesn't show up on most of those like aggregator sites. Does it show up on Google Flights?
No, it does not. That is the probably singular weakness of Google Flights is the inability. Yeah, I mean, Southwest has a, I love Southwest. It's great. It has a cult following, but Southwest likes to keep everything siloed. They want to control everything. And the truth is, Southwest flights are a little bit more expensive typically than other flights. And Southwest doesn't want those flights to be compared to American or especially Spirit or Frontier. I mean, Southwest, you can still bring, you know, two checked bags for free. I think you can do, I'm pretty sure you still can do like a surfboard, like your golf clubs, like for free. So it's not apples to apples comparison and compares, you know, to the other carriers in the US. And
Southwest, yeah, I've kind of found that that's what I've, the sense I've gotten. I've flown Southwest a lot in the past 2 years. And what I've liked about them so much is that you can, they have like a no questions asked cancellation or change policy. And I know that with COVID, a lot of airlines have started to do this a bit more, but that's always been Southwest's policy. And there's also no like there's no assigned seats. So you just get there when you get there, when you check in, you know, you sit where you want. I've liked that because there's actually been a couple times in the past 2 years where I've had to like last minute cancel a flight. Years ago, my wife got the flu. We were in New Jersey. We were supposed to fly back to California where we lived at the time. And like 3 days before our flight, she got the flu and we had Southwest. We just changed it to like 3 days later. It was fine. You know, and any other airline would be like a $200 change fee or, you know, more.
It was pre-pandemic is bonkers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Southwest is just, it's no, I mean, no BS to summarize it. It's great. And you don't really appreciate it until you've been in a situation like you just described with your wife having the flu. And then you're like, I love Southwest. It saved you, you know, $200-ish, which is huge.
Yeah. So, okay. So flights are a big part of it. I guess what else, what do most people not realize when they're trying to book big trips like this? And flights are a big part of it, I'm sure, but I'm sure there's a lot else. What are some of like the most common mistakes or misconceptions or things that people don't quite realize when they're trying to plan trips like this?
Great question. The big thing that we have, and we've coined the term, the flight first rule. So what people do is they will, say, I want to go on these very specific dates. We'll just say to Mexico. And they'll book their, like maybe a non-refundable hotel or all-inclusive or a cruise or tours or something. And then they will go, now I need to find your flight. But a lot of times a flight can be like one of the most expensive components of your whole trip. So we have the flight first rule. Let the cheap flight be your guide. Try to be flexible on your dates. And once you've booked that cheap flight and maybe you'll save, you know, $200 to $300 on it, then book your hotel, then book the cruise or whatever. So it's kind of flipping things on its head and rewiring how you think about booking travel. Because especially like we hear people like they're going to Africa and they're going on a huge safari, but they have very specific dates. And then that's when you end up paying, you can be paying like $1,000 more for your flight than you really should be.
And is that because like, you know, flying on a Friday or Saturday is going to be more expensive than flying on like a Wednesday? Is that part of it?
Yeah. It, you know, the cheapest days to have your butt in that seat and flying is Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturdays are typically going to be the cheapest. This is all supply and demand. There's just
Tuesday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday. I want to remember that too.
Yeah, very important. Okay. I mean, cheap flights can happen on any day of the week, but just typically what we see is, you know, there's more supply. I mean, the airlines have trouble filling seats on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. So they're more apt to have sales on those days. You know, it doesn't, kind of backing this up a little bit, people always think, you know, well, when's the best time to actually book your flight? You know, I've heard Tuesday at like 2 a.m. or Black Friday. And it's like, no, cheap flights can happen at any time. It's more important when you're actually flying and not booking last minute, booking, you know, at least, you know, 30, 45 days before departure, trying to be flexible with your dates again. I mean, that's the key. And there's no special day that's going to find you cheap flights.
Is that where the jump comes in about a month before you fly somewhere or travel anywhere?
Yeah, historically, I will tell you with COVID now and not very many business travelers, you can book some flights, you know, within a week and it's still not crazy expensive, but flexibility and booking well in advance is going to be just so important. I mean, if you can be booking you know, 6 months, or at least start looking 6 months in advance, or even 11 months in advance, set up some Google Flights price alerts on dates that you might want to go to destinations, and then watch, you know, over a few months and just see what flight prices are doing. And if you see a big drop, it's like, book it. And as long as you book a main cabin fare right now, no matter what airline you're on, you can cancel it for a voucher. So let's say it drops big after you've booked it, cancel for a voucher, rebook it. You'll get a voucher back, which is
that's a good one.
Pretty beautiful thing, and that flexibility is amazing.
One thing I've noticed, we're in the U.S. here, and most people don't take the train anywhere. But I live fairly close to D.C. I grew up fairly close to New York City, and so there are some pretty popular train lines, basically on those East Coast cities, sort of from Boston down to D.C. or maybe Richmond. And what I always noticed is that every once in a while, I would look at those prices and try to take them. Those prices will skyrocket. So if you buy a train ticket from like DC to New York, like 3 or 4 months in advance, it'll be like $40 round trip. If you buy it 2 weeks in advance, it's like $120 round trip.
Yep. No. And that's the same thing with Europe Rail for the most part. Yeah. It's the closer you get, I mean, they know that they can charge more. So it's always good, to book as far out as you possibly can and just watch prices. But I just realized, that a lot of people, sometimes they have to book last minute. And just a lot of times when you don't have that flexibility, you're going to end up paying more. It's just kind of the way it works.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get into a bit about COVID realities, but we'll get there a little bit later. You've talked a bit about points and the miles and all that. I think a lot of people swear by that, and then a lot of other people just have no really idea what it is. I'm sort of probably more towards the latter camp. Like, I have the Chase Sapphire Reserve card, which gives me lots of travel points, and I've used that to book many trips I've taken, but that's like really all that I've done. For people who aren't really well versed in the miles programs and the travel rewards, like, where do you start if you're trying to get into that kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like you at least have some for sure baseline knowledge. And I'd say you're even like intermediate. I mean, reserve card, which is pretty good. When you get started, start looking for a card that, a lot of people right away, they're like, well, I don't want to pay an annual fee at all. And it's like, well, then you're not going to get like any benefits. So what we recommend, like, probably the singular card that would be the best for someone starting out would be a Chase Sapphire preferred card, which is the sister or brother card of the reserve. You have $95 annual fee. Right now, they're offering a crazy 100,000 point signup bonus.
Wow.
If you spend $4,000,
that's really good.
The highest it's ever been.
Context, that's so when I signed up for it maybe 3-4 years ago, I got 50,000. And 50,000 is like, I think $1,500 in travel, something along those lines. So 100,000 is going to be like $3,000 in travel. That's like a trip to Europe almost.
It's definitely, yes. Wow. Paying for almost everything. Yeah. It's, 100,000 points is pretty amazing. And the cool thing with that is, we just recommend using those points to, book a cheap flight. If you find, for Europe example, if you can find a $300 or $400 flight, you can book it with like 25,000, Chase points. And that's really just like the baseline simple thing that we recommend. You can also use those points to book hotels or tours. It's just super simple. The other card that we recommend, which is similar, is the Capital One Venture card. And that one, has what they call a purchase eraser. You can just put, like a train ticket, from DC to New York on your card. And normally you could never use points for that. And then they just use that purchase eraser and it'll take some of your points and just remove it right off your statement. It doesn't get any easier than that. So, those two cards, maybe signing up for one, get the points, use them. Then maybe 6 months later, sign up for another card. That's the best way to get your kind of feet wet. And maybe you'll like it. Maybe it's too much work or trying to keep track of things, but that's just a great place to start.
Yeah, I've liked the Chase card. I mean, I think you're right. I think a lot of people balk at that like $400 yearly fee, whatever it is now. But the way I look at it is like, I know you get points for everything you spend on the card, and you get 3 times the points for anything travel related, which includes like eating out. And so I know that in a given year, I'm going to get way more than $400 back in travel rewards. And sometimes it's like more like a thousand or, you know, over. So it's all, I'm always at least breaking even. If I'm always at least breaking even, like, why wouldn't I do it? And that first year I got it, when I got those 50,000 points, like, I think I used that. We live in, again, in California at the time. Like, I used that to basically take like an entire trip to like Yosemite for like a week. We like drove up and spent some night in hotels in different places. And it was like great. You know, it was like a free trip to all these amazing places. So that's the credit card angle. And I guess the days of the 15 credit cards are over.
You know what? It is more difficult. And yeah, there's a lot more restrictions. You know, like Chase has what's called a 524 rule. We're not going to get into it. But yeah, it is more restrictive. But you know, if you kind of take it slow and open up even like two cards a year, three cards a year, which, you know, I think is kind of a safe way to start. I mean, you can still, you know, rack up quite a few points. You know, if you travel again, like 2 to 3 times a year, you could still, you know, cover, you know, quite a few of your costs. Or you can kind of go crazy and yeah, you can still get, you know, quite a few cards. But we always say, you know, take it slow because, I mean, credit card debt is a huge problem in the United States. I mean, we talk about credit cards like it's a game here, but it's very real that you can get yourself into trouble and you got to make sure to pay on time, protect your credit score. You know, opening up cards doesn't actually hurt your credit score. It may dip for like a month or two when you open or close, but paying on time is the most important thing.
Yeah. So what about the whole world of like airline miles? That's something that I've never really dipped into. What's going on there?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, credit cards, you know, like American Express has, you know, their Delta SkyMiles cards. Citi has their, you know, American Airlines cards and so on and so forth. I mean, those are good cards to open up as well. And definitely, you know, trying to get those points. And, you know, if you want to fly economy, to keep it kind of simple, you know, my wife and I, obviously, I would say we're like very advanced level of travelers. So,
I mean, I saw a photo of you guys in like the, you know, the fold down reclining seats on clearly some like trans Pacific flight or something. So yeah, I'm sure you guys are doing pretty good.
But we're not paying cash for that. You know, we're using our points and miles and maximizing them. And there are, you know, quite a few different routes and airlines that you can use your points from these signup bonuses to fly, you know, essentially for free, or, you know, maybe like $100 or $200 in taxes and fees. I mean, it takes some work. I mean, you definitely have to learn, but it can be done. And there's plenty of guides out there, especially at thriftytraveler.com.
So is that like you open up like an American Airlines credit card to get started with that, or is it a different system?
Yeah. So yeah, it can be that, or it can be just like, you know, you're talking about the Chase Sapphire Preferred or Reserve card. And then those points are what we call like flexible currencies. So you'd be earning Chase Ultimate Rewards points. So you can transfer them, you know, to different airline programs to kind of increase the amount of points you have in those programs. And then you can book like business class, et cetera. So, you know, you transfer into United or maybe one of their partner like Aeroplan, or maybe you want to fly, you know, Emirates. There's a lot of different ways that you can transfer those points out, similar to like Amex membership rewards or Citi thank you points.
And how has, let's talk about this for a little bit here. And so how has COVID kind of changed the game with these deals? Is it more that they're just more widespread because less people are traveling? Has the game kind of changed long-term, do you think?
Yeah, there's fewer routes to book, but I will say that it has been easier to book with points and miles just because, like you said, you know, there's fewer people traveling, whether they're traveling for, you know, personal reasons or for business. So it has been quite easy for my wife and I to, you know, book, you know, business class flights with our points and miles. I mean, we're not doing anything like magical with our points. You know, we're using our Chase card or our Amex card and earning those points and then flying lie flat to Europe primarily.
And are you seeing like hotel prices going down because of that?
No question. And it really depends on where you go in the world. Like Dubai right now is crazy cheap for hotel rates. Dubai is typically actually pretty cheap, but especially now with demand down and Europe as well. I mean, you know, it depends on when you go to Europe. Like you wouldn't want to go in August when all the Europeans are traveling. But if you can go in like the shoulder seasons, like September, October, or, you know, like April, May, and early June, I mean, you can definitely find some very low rates right now.
Okay. So I was curious to ask you, what do you think? So you've traveled a lot, obviously. I'm curious to ask you what you think some of like the up and coming spots in the world are. And so I'll give you an example of what I found a few years ago, and I'm curious to hear your side of it. So I've been to Europe a bunch. I studied abroad there in college. I went there in high school for 3 weeks. I've gone back a few times since. And a few years ago, I went to Croatia. And Croatia is this fairly small country on the Mediterranean, basically right next to Italy, like across part of the Mediterranean Sea from Italy. And it was much cheaper than going to Italy. In my experience, just as nice and beautiful with about a third of the tourists. And I got there and I was like, this is like a gem. Like nobody's here, nobody knows about it. And I feel like since then it's gotten a bit more popular, but still, like I think it's still off the radar. So I'm curious to hear from you if you know of any other places sort of like that people should check out.
Yeah, when were you there? Do you know what year that was?
This would have been probably like 2016, 2017.
Okay, yeah. So my wife and I were there in 2018, I think. And I will tell you, it was a little bit busier. I think a lot, I mean, I think Game of Thrones did quite a bit for Croatia because I know they filmed some there.
Dubrovnik,
And
yeah.
yeah. And then also, I think Star Wars did some stuff. So it is for sure a place that I would recommend, you know, visiting, especially like, I don't know if you went to Plitvice, the national
Yeah, we
park
did
there,
in Split. I
which
mean, it
is
was
incredible.
amazing. I have such
Yeah.
great memories of going up there.
It is for sure. It's becoming more popular. I know there's been some nonstop routes. I think JFK to Dubrovnik. I think American had a route from Chicago, maybe. It's hard to keep track of these. A lot of the airlines rolled out nonstop routes, and then now they've kind of pulled things back. But people definitely wanted to travel to Croatia. It's easy. We drove all the way from Zagreb, which is in the north. We drove all the way to Dubrovnik, and it was beautiful roads, easy to get around. Yeah, not too busy, like you said.
Did you drive
Yeah.
that coast road for probably would have been about an hour and a half or so right before you get to Dubrovnik? You're like on these mountain sides overlooking the Mediterranean Sea. That was like probably one of the best drives I've ever taken in my life. I compare that to Big Sur in California.
Yeah, it is beautiful, and there's all these like little spots you can stop. And no, I agree with you. It's in Europe. I think a lot of like Eastern Europe, like even if you start, you know, Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland. I mean, these, and then you get to, you know, to Budapest and Hungary, and then you keep going south. Those are cheap places to travel to. The food is delicious. I mean, it's beautiful. Not very many tourists. But I mean, people still speak English. It's easy to drive around if you want to rent a car. So yeah, those are my opinion. Eastern Europe's the value play. You kind of like you just
Interesting.
highlighted,
Interesting.
which is pretty sweet. I always think about it like travel is kind of like pulling back like layers of the onion. Like first, you want to just go to, you know, you want to go to Italy, you want to go to Rome, you want to go to London, you want to go to Paris. But then next trip, you're like, oh, you know, I want to go somewhere else. And you keep kind of just advancing. And I think Eastern Europe is a great place, you know, for someone's second or third trip to Europe, to try things out, or even first, you know, why not?
I'm curious to hear, what did you like about places like Estonia and Latvia? These are these small countries in the northeast of Europe, sort of bordering Russia. What did you like about going there?
And I will say, I should say, I have not been to Estonia, Latvia, or Lithuania, but I just know that they are cheap, and they're cheap to fly to now. I have been to Poland, and Warsaw and Krakow, as well as I've been to Budapest, which is, I think Budapest is amazing. So cheap. It's crazy.
I went a few of my friends and I we did it was a sort of a Eastern European trip. It was Croatia, it was Budapest, it was Prague and Brno in Czech Republic, and we did like the Turkish baths, or I guess the Hungarian baths in Budapest, and walked around, and food was amazing. These just sort of like unique experiences you can't really have anywhere that us Americans sort of think of as like a typical place to go to. And I just had a phenomenal time. And yeah, that trip was like a fairly cheap trip. We flew into Vienna. I think it was direct from maybe JFK or something. So we spent a couple of days in Vienna too, which was great. And then we did this whole little like, we drove around, we had a car, then we took a little flight into Croatia. It was like, you know, $100 to fly, you know, 45 minutes essentially. And that was just such a cool experience again, because we didn't really know what we were in for. It was so different than what we'd been before in like Western Europe, like France or England or Italy or something. And the people were great. I was really, really impressed with all of it.
Yeah. You had a great time. Yeah. I love Prague too. That was one I forgot to mention. It's Eastern Europe. That's what I'll say.
Yeah. You had mentioned earlier too, before we started recording this call, that you'd been to the Hyatt Ziva, I guess it was, in Punta Cana, Dominican Republic.
Yeah, Hyatt Ziva in Zalera, because it's like, yeah, this kind of combined resort. I'll let you talk about it.
I bring it up because my wife and I went there in May, so May of 2021. It was like our first quote-unquote post-COVID trip. We'd gotten vaccinated. We were feeling like we need to get the hell out of here already. You know, we've been stuck in our freaking house for over a year. And we found actually a really cheap flight, and we used our Chase Sapphire points to pay for like a third of the trip. So it would have been like a pretty expensive trip, just all-inclusive resort for like 6 days, ended up being like very manageable. And I loved it. I'm not an all-inclusive resort guy. When I travel, I like to like be out and doing things, and every day it's a new place, new thing. But after a year plus of COVID, I just wanted to sit on my ass and get pampered. And like, oh my God, this place. So that's the only all-inclusive I've ever been to. My wife has been to a lot, and she was like blown away by how good this was. I assume you have too. So talk about this place, because I'm not getting promoted or to talk about this. I was like in awe of it. And it sounds like you were too.
Yeah. So just so people know, so Hyatt has these Ziva and Zalera. Zalera is, they're both all inclusive. Zalera is adults only. And then the Ziva is like family, kids, everything. So Hyatt has purchased all these different resorts in primarily Mexico and then some other places in the Caribbean. During the last recession. And they're generally pretty good. Again, you can book them with Hyatt points, which is transferable from Chase's Ultimate Rewards program, which we've already talked about. So that's how we booked. But anyhow, this new property that was just built in Punta Cana is brand new. And this is first for Hyatt. They're going to be opening one, I think, next year in Barbados, which I am like ecstatic to go to.
Yeah, have you booked your flight yet?
So this Punta Cana spot for the Hyatt Ziva and Zalera. So there's both resorts there. There's two sides to it.
Yep.
And it's got a water park, which I don't know if you went to, is massive.
We did.
Crazy. Yeah.
It was like, so cool.
It's like everything is so like over the top in comparison to the other all-inclusive resorts that I've ever been to. But it's wild. So yeah, you can use 25,000 Hyatt points a night for a couple. And it's all inclusive. So we always say like the wild thing is like if you could book a cheap flight or use points to cover the flight and then you get there and then you use points, like it's actually cheaper to go on a trip than to stay at home.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, but I highly recommend that one. And I gotta plug Thrifty Traveler because we did a video review on it as well as a big review. So if you go to thriftytraveler.com and you write, Hyatt Zalera, Punta Cana. Actually, I think if you just Google it, it's like the fourth thing that comes or pops up. So definitely we're not getting paid. Neither of us are getting paid.
We should be. I'm not the kind of person who's just going to rant about something I don't love. You must have eaten there at a bunch of the restaurants. There's like maybe a dozen restaurants. Every restaurant is like 5-star. I couldn't believe it. And you know, again, I'm someone who hasn't been to all inclusive. So I was like, is this normal, Jen? My wife, his name is Jen. She's like, no, like this is not like, usually it's like a buffet with hamburgers. And this was like, you know, they had the buffet, but the buffet was like, they had a sushi kitchen. They had like fresh fish they would cook in front of you. They had like a Korean barbecue station. And this is just the buffet area. And then there's like an Italian restaurant, an Indian restaurant, like a local, like I cuisine. It was unreal. I couldn't believe it.
And the breakfast is phenomenal. Yes. Huge. Yes. I think breakfast is probably my favorite meal. coffee shop. Yeah. And it's all included. And obviously the alcoholic drinks, if that's your thing. There's no question. I mean, all inclusives aren't for everyone. But if there's one that if you're kind of like new to this all-inclusive and you're like, I just do want to go sit on my butt for, you know, a few days, definitely give this specific one a shot because it's definitely the best. And again, it is possible to book it with points.
So I'm gonna follow this little conversation here with a question from my wife. I asked her if she had any questions for you. And her question basically was, because she likes these all-inclusives typically, she's done a lot of them. Her question is like, in general, are they worth it? Like, when is it worth it to do an all-inclusive versus when is it worth it to just travel someplace and pay for your own flight and your own hotel and your own experiences?
Yeah. So I will first say that the people who typically go to all-inclusives and the people who like travel to Europe once or twice a year, they are a lot of times very different travelers.
Yeah.
This is a tough one. I will tell you, for my wife and I, we would never pay cash to go to an all-inclusive, but we would use points and miles to do it because we do love the beach. All-inclusives are very hit or miss. So I would always say, you know, if you're going to do an all-inclusive, hop on TripAdvisor. Like, let's say you're going to Cancun, you know, hop on TripAdvisor, go to one of the top five ones. Don't do anything else. And you'll typically see the Hyatt, Ziva, or Zilara in that top five. I know for Cancun specifically, it's right there. We do love going to, you know, going to Mexico on the beach and then, you know, getting a nice hotel, but then going into town and eating because the food can be so much better if you go into town, a little bit more fresh. Like you said, sometimes you can get a really good all-inclusive, but a lot of times the food is just not the same as you might get from a local, you know, spot.
So I guess the answer is like, do your homework. And if you want to
do your homework, okay.
And if it's a good all-inclusive, go for it. If not, probably not really worth it.
No. And a lot of people, you know, what they do, you know, they'll go to Cozumel every single year to the same place because they love it. And that's cool. I would say if you're an all-inclusive, you know, go top tier and, you know, don't go like crazy spend, but you know, it's in that top, yeah, 5 or 10, because if you're going to spend that money, you definitely want to make sure it's worth
it. We were on the flight home from Dominican Republic and like we heard the people behind us talking about their all-inclusive experiences. And my wife and I just kind of looked at each other like, oh, like, I'm glad we didn't do that.
Because it can be so starkly different. And that's what's like just shocking because, I've been to my fair share of awful all-inclusives or even like places you get sick and that doesn't happen as often as it used to, but I mean that you don't want that.
No kidding. Cool. All right. So I want to ask now a bit about COVID stuff. You know, we're still sort of in the midst of it and it's very strange because it feels like every month restrictions are changing up and down. We had wanted to go to Canada, to go to like Montreal and Quebec City, and Canada was closed and they just opened it up a few weeks ago, it seems like. I think Europe has some of the same things going on. So I guess in a nutshell, what could you say are the best places to go right now, considering everything in the world?
Yeah. Right now. So it is super complicated. And I will just say Thrifty Traveler, if you just go to thriftytraveler.com, we actually have a guide to the whole world, country by country guide, what the requirements are. And then we also have a Europe specific guide as well, right on our front webpage, go down to COVID-19 resources. But to answer your question, man, it is tough. And it really depends on, you know, if you're vaccinated or not, you know,
so let's assume you're vaccinated.
Yeah.
What do you do from there?
Yeah. So the assumption, you know, there's so many places in Europe that are relatively easy to go to right now, you know, especially like Italy seems to be pretty simple. Switzerland, Germany, France, these are kind of countries I've recently been to, so I can speak to that. But it is quite different, you know, like, so if you go to Germany, like you'll see no one wears cloth masks like we do. They all wear KN95 masks or medical grade masks, which is very different from, you know, what you'll see in France. So it is very different country by country and the rules are changing. So like, for example, the Netherlands, Amsterdam, obviously the largest city, their rules were no, you didn't have to have any vaccine, no test. Everybody could come in like 3 weeks ago. Then they completely, like a week and a half ago or something, then they said, everyone has to quarantine now. Wow. And then this morning they announced, now if you're vaccinated, you can come in without a quarantine, but no unvaccinated people. So it's like, and I'm in this space and this is our job to keep track of this. So the big thing that we always say is to double check, triple check, quadruple check before you leave, making sure that you know exactly what the rules are just to get in. The great thing with Europe is once you're in, especially if you're going by train, I mean, you can go anywhere within, you know, Europe for the most part, and you don't have to show a vaccine card or anything okay. like that. So if you're on a plane, you know, you're probably going to have to show a vaccine card. I mean, the big takeaway, I guess, is, yeah, don't go to Europe if you're not vaccinated, because it is just going to be quite difficult. And then, of course, there's that huge anxiety producing thing that, you know, to get back into the United States, no matter where you go abroad, you have to have a COVID, you know, a negative test to come back into the US. So, you know, you could have to be stuck and have to quarantine, you know, and it's so much less likely that you'll be positive if you are vaccinated.
Right.
And this isn't, I'm not trying to be political. I'm just saying this is
yeah,
kind of just
well,
the
you gotta
way
do what you gotta do and you gotta, yeah. we,
it's riskier.
It is. Riskier. And that, I think a lot of the uncertainty is what kind of is making people hesitant about travel. Because like, is there a country in Europe that really has been consistent throughout the past through few months or year about requirements? Is there one that like you haven't seen it change much? Like if you're going to fly into Europe and you want to make sure that you getting there is fairly easy and then you can go around from there, is there a place that like makes sense, or are they all kind of in flux?
They're all a little bit in flux, but I will say that the ones that are heavily dependent on tourism are less in flux. So, I mean, the rules have changed in all these countries, but they're just less likely to change for vaccinated travelers. You know, you start thinking about Spain, Greece, Italy. I mean, those are pretty, I'd probably say Italy specifically.
Okay.
I mean, as long as you're vaccinated, you know, most of these European countries are going to be pretty good, but specifically those ones that I mentioned, you know, should be relatively easy to get into.
So if you, for example, book a flight to Rome or Madrid, you can be fairly confident that things aren't going to change out of nowhere.
Yes, fairly confident.
Yeah, there's a big asterisk there. I know. Everything's changing, but yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Everything has an asterisk, but I will say, I mean, you know, once you're in, again, like I said, it's pretty you know, simple. I mean, masks everywhere, not outside, but you know, when you're going into a restaurant, well, like, so for example, in Germany now and Italy and in France, I mean, you can't get into a restaurant unless you've been vaccinated. Like it's, right. That's it.
Right.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Or if you've had a recent COVID test, but I mean, if you go on a trip and you'd have to be, you know, tested every few days, that's no fun.
Yeah.
So again, going back to if you're vaccinated, it's just so much easier. But it's different here than in the US for sure.
Well, get your vaccines. Let's just leave it at that.
I know.
What about, I would imagine that you see a lot more travelers doing more like local trips, like especially if you're talking about people from the United States. I know that my wife and I have. So, you know, we had planned these big trips. We wanted to go to, like I said, Canada, or maybe finally going to Europe again, or we did go to the Dominican Republic. That was our kind of our one outing. But instead of doing those, we've taken like 4-day trips to like Asheville, North Carolina, or like going to the beach for like a long weekend, you know? And that has been our kind of way of saying we're still traveling, but not quite how we would have. We actually got married last year. So instead of our honeymoon in the Caribbean, we found this like beautiful, like estate kind of place out in the wine country of Virginia. And that's how we've been doing it. I would imagine you're seeing a lot of other travelers, American travelers, doing something similar.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, obviously you just highlighted some great domestic trips. Domestic travel is for sure the number one thing. You know, we've obviously been talking so much about international travel, but for most people right now, like, it doesn't really make sense. But these quick weekend trips, I mean, that's a thing to do. And flight prices, you know, to a lot of places, you know, have been relatively cheap. And there's so much in the United States to explore. I mean, we live in a country that's incredible. I mean, you know, the difference between the desert Southwest and, you know, wine country in Virginia, I mean, the significantly different culturally as well as geographically.
Yes, definitely.
So there's so much to see in the US. And I know people are always like, oh, what about domestic travel? Do you not like that? And I'm like, no, I love that. So, I mean, even going to Alaska, I know this summer Alaska fares were so cheap, and my wife and I went in May and were blown away by, oh my God, Alaska is crazy different from anywhere else we've even been in Canada. So Yeah.
And I you know, I kind of want to ask you, like, what are your hidden secrets in America? But I'm sure there's like hundreds of them, you know, like, where do you start?
There's so many places that we haven't been yet, that I'm sure, like Asheville, we've never visited.
Really cool town. It's like a mountain hippie town in the middle of the Appalachians, North Carolina. Music and food and beer and art. It's really cool.
Yeah. And, you know, so we've been to Savannah, Georgia. So we've never been to Charleston, but we hear great things about, I mean, we love Savannah. I mean, just, you know, you think about in just the Southeast there, I mean, to visit. And then obviously, you know, and you're near DC and in Virginia, I mean, there's so much to see, you know, just in DC. And I will say that, you know, DC is pretty competitive as far as flight pricing with Baltimore's airports, as well as Dulles and Washington Reagan. So flight prices into DC, you know, to just see, you know, even if you just want to come to the Capitol. I mean, flight prices are pretty cheap to go to DC, and man, I highly recommend that.
Cool. Yeah. We had a fairly good flight prices coming in and out the fact. Past couple times we've flown, so yeah
you're in a good spot for cheap flights.
What about any travel elsewhere in the world, like Mexico, South America, Asia, Africa? Asia's far and I'm sure it's harder to get into. Are there any specific places that make sense with everything going on right now?
Yeah, so you know, Thailand is one of the few Asian countries that's kind of trying to open up. And Thailand is incredible, beautiful. There's so much to see, from beaches to the mountains in the north. And it's so cheap and the people are so nice. Like, if someone's going to, like, obviously Japan is incredible, but like, if you want to like a pretty nice budget exotic trip, Thailand, do Thailand for sure. And that should be one of the first countries that'll be opening up, hopefully, you know, in early 2022, but you know, we'll see.
Fingers crossed, right?
Yeah. You know, it's complicated, of course. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, my wife and I, probably the country we go to most often is Mexico, which is kind of crazy just because there's so much different food. And whether you're going to like the interior, like Mexico City or Oaxaca for food and drinks, or of course, all of the amazing beach destinations on both the Pacific and Gulf and I can't remember all of the
oceans. We've talked about travel for a long time, so I know.
The Caribbean. Yeah, I mean, there's so much to see. So,
we can sort of finish up here on this note. So what are the requirements to get into Mexico right now?
Yeah, nothing.
Really? No. Wow. Oh boy.
Mexico, that is like, to answer your question from earlier, like the singular country that has changed, like has not changed during COVID is Mexico.
No vaccine, no quarantine, nothing, just welcome in.
Yeah, but then you have to get tested to go home, right? Which obviously is a wrinkle. But yeah, no, it's been Mexico heavily dependent on tourism.
Yeah.
Like heavily dependent on tourism.
What if you're driving across the border? Do you have to get a test to get back into the US if you're driving?
That is a good question that I do not know the answer to.
Okay.
Definitely, that would be like one of those ones you got to research. Yeah, with as cheap as flight prices have been to Mexico, it's like probably fly.
Yeah, okay.
Versus drive.
Yeah, I used to live in San Diego, so we were about 30 miles from the border at most. And I went into Tijuana a number of times. Tijuana is its own experience, and it's sort of like Las Vegas on steroids and other drugs.
You know,
it's great. Go there if you can, but definitely keep your purse close to you, especially at night. But yeah, I'm sort of surprised to hear that about Mexico, but I guess not too much because it's a bit of a poorer country. And yes, tourism seems to be like the biggest, you know, industry that they have in a lot of ways.
So. For a lot of, obviously they have other industry, of course, but yeah, it's definitely of quite a few cities are just heavily dependent. I do have a question for San Diego since you live there.
Yeah.
Did you ever do where you go to the border and you book a flight out of Tijuana and then you go across the bridge? Did you ever do that?
That's a big travel hack that lots of people in San Diego do. I've never done it, but yes, apparently if you live in San Diego or are close enough to get into Tijuana fairly easily, like flight prices out of Tijuana are much, much cheaper than anywhere else. And San Diego in particular, because the airport there only has one runway, flight prices tend to be a lot higher and there just aren't as many flights. So yes, I knew a good amount of people who would just walk across the border and take a flight from Tijuana. Yeah.
because they have this bridge where you can park at the border right next to the Tijuana airport. And then you like go across this bridge into to Mexico to catch a flight because there's lower taxes and fees and everything. So it's, yeah, it's a great travel hack.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's fun.
Cool. Well, any other quick travel hacks that you have before we wrap up here today?
Yeah. I mean, I'll just touch on again. I mean, yeah, Google Flights to book. Book your flight first, that flight first rule that we have. And then, you know, if you want us to find the deals for you and just you're flexible on where you're going, when you're going, sign up for Thrifty Traveler Premium, thriftytraveler.com/premium. That is going to be probably the single like silver bullet for helping you save on your next flight.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, listen, it's been great having you on. Thanks so much for taking the time and stopping by.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Matt. This has been a blast. We quickly just went through an hour.
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to use some of these tips. I'm gonna start looking more at Google Flights, too. We're actually thinking of going up to Boston in a few weeks, and it's like kind of last minute, but if we're going to try something, why not Google Flights? We'll
give it a shot.
Cool. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Educator Podcast How To. I've been your host, Matt Douglas. To find more episodes of the Educator Podcast, including the Perspectives and Walking History series, visit theeducatorpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts from. To get access to all kinds of extras, including the full unedited video interview from this episode and many more, please visit the exclusive content tab at theeducatorpodcast.com. And as always, please like, review, rate, subscribe, share, whatever, to help support the show and to get updates on each new episode as they come out. Now, Jared does run what seems like a phenomenal program at Thrifty Traveler. We have some more details about sort of what his program is like and the kind of service that you can pay for. If you get the full unedited video interview from this episode, you can hear all about that. But basically, he runs a service where for about $50 a year, you can get access to all these phenomenal flight deals and other things like that. And honestly, seems like a great service to me. You spend $50 in a year and you saved a few hundred, you know, if you're traveling to some place that you didn't even know that you could go to. So thank you so much, Jared, for coming on. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you for listening to this episode. To find more information about me and my work, please visit lifecoachingsd.com or follow Life Coaching SD on Instagram. And of course, to check out more of the podcast, go to theeducatorpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.